We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
I officially welcome you to Science of Reading Week. Now, for those of you who may not know who Lexia is, we are part of the Cambium brand. So Lexia is a part of the Cambium brand, and we offer a comprehensive suite of science reading-based literacy solutions, as well as evidence-based assessments and interventions from Voyager Circus Learning. I am your host, Cassandra Wheeler. I serve as the Director of Letter State Success with Lexia, and I will be here every day. I was here Monday. I'm here Tuesday. I'm here today. I'll be here tomorrow. I'm like cousin Cassandra at this point, right? So I will be here with our star-studded group of presenters, and today will be no different. It's so nice to have all of you. Thank you from wherever you are across the world. And we are just thrilled that you're joining us because this is our second annual educational event devoted to the science of reading. We're serious about that at Lexia. We've been learning from some of the most respected minds in the national literacy community and celebrating the brilliant educators like you dedicated to this work of implementing structured literacy all across the country for the classrooms of students that you serve. We also like to thank our partners at EdWeb making this possible and of course our brilliant presenters. Speaking of brilliant presenters, let's get started. Today I would like to introduce you to Mickey Ray, the Chief Academic Officer for the Kentucky Department of Education. She serves as a leader in policy development for improving instruction and learning in K-12 schools. She leads the Office of Teaching and Learning. She leads that staff by providing oversight and direction for statewide initiatives in standards development and implementation, high-quality professional learning, high-quality instructional resources, instructional practices related to scaling highly effective teaching, assessment practices, early learning, MTSS, grant programs, and Title II Part A. She does it all, right? She previously served as a literacy consultant for program standards and as a policy advisor for that OTL group prior to her work as the director of the Division of Program Standards. She is a second generation educator whose mother is a retired elementary school teacher. Mickey has had an additional 15 years of service in Kentucky public education, working as a high school English teacher. Mickey, we're so grateful to have you today. Thank you for joining us. Next up, we have Ebony Johnson, the current Supervisor of Literacy and Library Services for Columbus City Schools in Ohio. In this role, she is responsible for the district's K-12 Library Services Program for 110 schools, along with supporting literacy curriculum and professional development for 75 K-5 schools. Under her tenure, the Library Services Program has been able to increase the number of diverse books available to students through the We Need Diverse Books CCS initiative. Ebony is passionate about providing educators with engaging and high-quality professional learning experiences. She is a local, state, and national presenter focusing on topics such as literacy, trauma, and leadership. Ebony has served over 20 years in public K-12 education. She is a former elementary teacher and elementary principal. She received her undergraduate degree from Wright State University and her master's in education administration from The Ohio State University. Ebony, we are so glad to have you with us this morning. Thank you for bringing your expertise to this forum. Mickey and Ebony are joined by Lexia's own Carrie Larkin, who brings more than 20 years of special education experience to her role as Senior Education Advisor. Carrie began her career teaching secondary language arts and special education at Anacostia High School in Washington, D.C. Public Schools. She left the classroom to become the director of her teacher preparation program, imagine that, which prepared and evaluated special education teachers in partnership with George Washington University. Based on her leadership and teacher preparation, Carrie was hired back into DCPS And from there, led special education as the director of academic programs and then senior deputy chief of specialized instruction until March 2021. Carrie leverages her experience and partnership with other district leaders to increase educational equity through meaningful inclusion, evidence-based practice, and sustained professional learning. She is a passionate anti-racism advocate with an emphasis on meaningful inclusion and systemic change. And we are so proud that she is part of the Lexia family and joining us today. Thank you, thank you, thank you, all of you. We're so grateful for your time. So let's just go ahead and get started.
Do it.
I'd like to begin by talking about where so many districts find themselves currently. You know, some report using data to make the case for their instruction based on the science of reading, saying that current methods just simply aren't working. In most cases, those current methods reflect a balanced literacy approach. In fact, Columbus City Schools, Ohio's largest school district, started implementing the science of reading in 2021 after previously using a balanced literacy approach. So, Ebony, could we get you to share your experience leading up to that decision and maybe why and how you addressed such a massive change? Because those challenges, I'm sure, were happening as you were going through that process. But talk about those challenges along the way as well.
Absolutely, Cassandra. Thank you so much for allowing us to share a little bit of our story. So I will begin by saying I actually joined our team in 2021. So some of this work happened before I arrived. So I was able to get a little historical context from some of our teammates. And so for several years leading up to our shift, our team began to, as you said, look at data. We realized the balanced literacy approach was working for some of our students, but it wasn't working for all. And so the need to make some adjustments and reevaluate what we were doing became evident through looking at that data. So our team began working with the Ohio Department of Education to do some research and decide, okay, what could be the best method that we could start engaging our teachers in to have a greater impact on our student achievement. Our former director of elementary education at the time, with her team, began doing that research and thus became the science of reading. They're like, okay, this is what we need. This is the missing link. You know, we need to start making this shift. The team did a lot of research and work around that and decided that that was the way we wanted to go to begin to make that greater impact on our students. So when I came to the team, my primary role was then, okay, how do we make this happen, right? So they've done the research. They know this is where we need to go. They know we want to make this shift. But with 75 elementary buildings, how do we begin impacting all of those buildings, all of those teachers, so that we can reach all of our students? And so that was also around the time that we were granted some ESSER funding. So we spent a lot of our ESSER dollars investing in making this shift. Luckily for us, our superintendent, Dr. Angela Chapman, she is really prioritizes early literacy. And so we had the support from top down to spend our dollars and our funding on what it was that we needed to make this shift. So with that, we partnered with Lexia to train all of our teachers at the same time in letters. That was a huge undertaking for our district. But through our collaboration and our work with our Lexia partners, we were able to make that happen. We have been able to train all of our teachers. We're up to unit 6 in letters. But in addition to doing that, we thought it was important that we trained our district administrators, our instructional coaches, and our district leaders. So we really took this approach on holistically training everyone possible in our organization on what this meant to start instructing based off of methods that are rooted in the science of reading. I would say as we've navigated through this journey, one of the biggest challenges that we have encountered is the resistance. We've had some teachers that are really, they held on tightly to some of those practices and strategies that they learned through some of the professional development and things that they've done with balanced literacy. But I will say, as we've continued to engage and grow our educators throughout our units, throughout our additional training on some of the resources that we're able to provide, and as they have received some additional instruction, that shift has been able to happen. And when we have been able to get more and more of our educators on board.
That is so powerful. You know, we're having this webinar today and many of our Alexia family are joining us. And I think everybody in our organization, right, Carrie, everybody knows about what's happening there in Columbus, Ohio, with regard to that partnership. And so Ebony, to know that you're there leading that charge and coming in immediately having the that great responsibility, we just take the time this morning to say thank you for that undertaking. And it is certainly paying dividends there to the children of that great city and overall across that entire state for the impact that you're having there. So thank you so much for that. And so as we think about our why here today and what brings us to these important critical shifts for our children, let's focus on that for the next few minutes, thinking about the alignment for how our training for teachers, what they're receiving within that training, and the time that they need to make sure that they're drawing the connections from their professional learning and impacting that right there in the classroom for the students that they serve. And so when we talk about today with this ecosystem of educators, we're talking about district leaders, school leaders, coaches, interventionists, teachers, right? All working toward the same goals. And so Ebony talking about what they're doing there in Columbus City is a great example of an ecosystem, right? But Mickey, there in Kentucky, you've got an ecosystem happening there as well. So can I get you to share your thoughts on this ecosystem from your experience based on the great things happening there in the state of Kentucky?
Thank you so much. I want to begin just by saying that I'm so honored to be on the panel today and to have met Ebony and Carrie, and I've had the pleasure of knowing you, Cassandra, for a while. And so just really thankful to be able to share part of the Kentucky story today. And I think you'll notice that there are many similarities to what I'm about to share to what Ebony shared around her particular district. But in Kentucky, our science of reading efforts were made possible very similarly through the agency ESSER ARP funding. But now, thankfully, we are able to sustain the work that we're doing through the Kentucky Reads to Succeed Fund. And that was a part of a key legislation that was passed in our state in 2022 with Senate Bill 9, the Kentucky Reads to Succeed Act. And this legislation, which was co-sponsored by Senator Steve West and Representative James Tipton, it afforded the Department of Education the opportunity to really make a significant investment in teachers. And we did that through the establishment of the Teacher Reading Academies. And so the KDE launched the Kentucky Reading Academies in the fall of 2022 with our first ever cohort of letters for K through 5 teachers. And we also offered letters for administrators. So it was provided at no cost for our educators as long as they were going through the reading academies. And so first, I want to speak to our target audience. So in promoting the Kentucky Reading Academy's letters training, it was very important to us that it was made available to all K through 5 educators in Kentucky public schools. And so that means general, special education teachers, reading specialists, coaches, interventionists, even certified staff is needed, because we know we have many individuals who are supporting reading and reading instruction across our state. And then, of course, there was a focus on administrators as well. But unlike some other state initiatives, that the professional learning, so the letters training, was not mandatory. It is opt-in. So we are working very hard to empower the willing and to increase participation statewide just by elevating educator testimonials, so telling their stories. We're also trying to elevate and lift up as bright spots the promising data just from across the field in our state to point to the significance of the learning and that it is immediately applicable and relevant to K through 5 teaching and learning across our state. Secondly, very similar to Ebony's story, we are encouraging a systemic approach. And so we really would love to see entire schools, entire districts, participating, even down to groups of vertical teams or PLCs, also administrators across a district participating together. But in saying that, we also allow for maximum flexibility. So if there is even one teacher who is wanting to participate from a school building across our state, we say, please, please register, please join us. And we've been able to offer a second cohort, and we'll have a third cohort available for Kentucky educators moving into next fall. But I'm certain that this will not surprise you, but we are participating in a third-party evaluation of this work. And one of the key findings, and again, will not shock anyone, is that administrator and district support is really the key driver in initial signups for our educators. And so that could be by providing incentives, such as a local stipend. Maybe that looks like flexible PD hours, release time for teachers to be able to collaborate and talk about the Bridge to Practice activities. Conversely, a lack of support at the building level was seen as a barrier to participation. So teachers reported learning about letters primarily through the principal or through a coach or specialist within their building. And the administrators reported that they learned about the opportunity through an invitation from district leaders, and even our local educational cooperatives. So I cannot stress enough that establishing the right conditions within the state and local ecosystem is truly critical for teacher participation and for their success and continuing through the learning. And at the KDE, we are continuing to target administrators specifically for communication and for their participation, because we know that that's such a critical role for change agency and for implementation success.
I love hearing both of your stories and being a part of the background for some of those things based on the position that I sit. And Mickey, you talked about, you know, the voluntary nature of the Kentucky implementation, where teachers can literally raise their hand and decide that they want to be a part of this movement and they want to engage. And we have some states that, again, make it a requirement, or some districts make it a requirement that they must go through that. And so one of the questions that I'll just kind of mention that's being brought up by our lovely audience today is, how does that happen? Excuse me. How do you support that when there are some schools where things are going well? They are making the grade. Things look like they've got it going on. How do you transition and make that mindset available? And Carrie, you certainly can jump in on this too. But what do our leaders have to do in a situation where they want to bring about this systemic change, but there are places that don't have the evidence to prove that maybe that's even necessary, but yet and still it is? So how can we respond to that question? Either one of you.
I don't mind to start it off, but you know, I would think in a situation like ours where it is not mandatory, you know, for a district administrator perspective, if you are able to provide supports internally to encourage broad participation, I think, you know, very similar to Ebony's example, like that would be the ideal. But if not, I think that if you could even try to empower the willing on a local level and really make an investment in those teachers, because again, the most persuasive thing that we have found is when districts are encouraging other districts, teachers are encouraging other teachers. So if you could have even just a few takers to begin the training, and again, in our case, that would be provided for those teachers at no cost, then hopefully the word would begin to spread and you would be able to empower and equip more and more teachers across buildings and across the district.
Because sometimes in the places where they're, you know, already high performing, they feel like if it's not broken, why are you trying to fix it? But yet and still, we know how important this science of reading is for our educators. Carrie and Ebony, any opportunity to respond to that? And if not, we'll keep the questions coming.
No, I would challenge any school or district leader to look underneath the headlines at who is accomplishing what and on what skills. I think, you know, the marquee message may be we are high performing. We still want our teachers to be well grounded in this science, so they are prepared for any child who walks through that door. And I'd love to build a little bit on what Ebony and Mickey were sharing with us with their great district success. I think Ebony brought up a very important point that teachers show up every single day to do right by children and teach them to read. Many teachers and leaders were prepared in and believed in a balanced literacy approach, because teaching isn't what we do, it's who we are. We carry this in our blood and our soul and our families through generations, as we've heard through the other participants and in my own family. And I think it's important to welcome the science of reading is a call in to all people who love children, who love literacy, who see literacy as a civil right. We welcome you into this science that has demonstrated what we weren't getting, the pieces we weren't getting right. It's no teacher's fault. It's no leader's fault. We know what we need to do differently, and we need to do it. And Mickey made such a beautiful point when she said that district and building leader perspective is what allows teachers to say, okay, it's not just me. It's not that I skipped the one class in the science of reading. It is not that. It's deep, rich learning that begins at the top. It can begin with kids. It just needs to start. But I really want to create a welcoming environment for our people who are making a difficult transition, because people who love reading and literacy are the movement in the science of reading movement.
All right, so what about this twist? So we heard from district leaders that have adopted new programs, they have new instruction now that's based on the science of reading and the learning that they've had with that professional learning. And so they're not seeing results. They're implementing things based on what they thought they were supposed to be doing there, but they're not seeing results. So we're thinking about the questions that we get from those leaders on a broad basis and how you address those difficulties with trying to actually implement those evidence-based literacy instruction and pedagogy and precepts to accelerate their literacy. So what response do we get when they're trying to put the cart and the horse in the right direction, but yet they're not seeing those immediate results? Carrie, you want to start off
with that? Yeah. Sure. I'll take a first stab at that. And then I'm really already looking forward to what Mickey and Ebony will share with us. But I would say you need to look first, let's look closer and more deeply at what progress means. How are you defining progress? I am quite certain that if the investment is on the student level, that we are seeing improvements on the skill level. It may not be showing up in that high scale, like high stakes state assessment, but you are seeing growth on important skills. If you are beginning your transformation in the science of reading on the teacher and leader level, let's look at the instructional quality. Let's look at the teacher efficacy piece, because that's what's going to show up first in the transition. And then the other pieces, we are talking about an ecosystem. There is no one lever that's going to create the change. It's multiple levers working in coordination with one another. And that is going to take a little time. But I think our leaders, and I want to step back to hear from them, will tell you there is progress. You might need to look at that progress differently in the beginning in order to see it and build the energy toward this sustainable growth.
Thank you, Carrie. Mickey, your thoughts?
Sure. I think I would tell you to give yourself and your school teams permission to be calm and carry on. You know, mm-hmm. We know that implementation fidelity takes time. It can be up to 3 to 5 years before you see gains across all student demographic groups. And so there are just some key questions that I would ask leaders. First, you know, do all of your stakeholders know and understand the instructional vision for that content area? Like, have you worked to develop common language about what high quality resources, what high quality instruction looks like around the teaching and learning of reading? Also, you know, what was the quality of, if it's a new resource, what was the quality of that launch professional learning? Did it really do enough to support the rationale behind the resource so that teachers understand not only what makes up that resource, but how it's going to benefit their instruction, how it's going to benefit student learning? So, you know, sometimes I think that we don't take enough time for the rationale building, and that's such a key area for teachers and for educators, because we are empowered to ask questions. We want to know the why. So I think we need to sit in that space in some ways. And then next, I would ask, you know, do you have high functioning PLCs, professional learning communities, for ongoing implementation support? So just handing that resource over is never going to be enough. There must be ongoing professional learning. It should be sustained. It should be embedded. And then ultimately, there likely will need to be some coaching supports that are provided for educators as they're implementing a new resource. And so, you know, do you have walkthrough instruments? Are teachers familiar with those tools so that they understand what the expectations are, maybe in year one, in year two, or beyond? So for us, part of our most recent messaging is really around the value of that curriculum-based professional learning and in-school coaching to build teacher efficacy and to simply support implementation fidelity across that building and across the full system.
Thank you so much for that. Yes. Ebony, we want to hear from you.
Oh, I don't know where to start. I agree with so many things.
I know, right?
That Carrie and Mickey said. I think I'm going to start with one thing that Carrie talked about. Well, two things. One, time. It does take time. And looking at that measurement again. So for us, since we put the majority of our investment with our teacher professional development, our measurement was for us on the capacity building for our teachers. And so through our internal survey and feedback results, through some of the ones that Lexia did, we were able to see a greater sense of confidence for our teachers in teaching reading. We were able to see that there was a better connection for our teachers between the resources that we had provided them and why they were utilizing those resources or the components that made up those resources. And I think those were some of the gains that we were able to see early on. We might not have seen the results in like those student achievement right away, but the fact that we were reaching our teachers and our teachers were starting to see the impact of their learning, we know the student results are going to come next. And then in addition, to piggyback on what Mickey said, I think when you talked about the fidelity implementation and looking at those launch activation type professional development that you do with your resources, one of the things that we were able to understand from the feedback is we needed to do additional professional learning after the launch sessions. So we might have done our launch sessions early on, and then our teachers engaged in this letters, and they're like, well, now that we understand this a little bit more, I need to go back and understand this component of that. So one of the things I think as district leaders that we need to be able to do is to have a mechanism to get feedback from your stakeholders so that you can make the adjustments on the district level. So now that we know that our teachers are wanting some additional training after the launch sessions, how do we provide that? You know, we have a great internal team who they love me when I say, okay, we need to do a refresher or we need to build a course for this because our teachers are needing that. And I think as district leaders, we have to be able to receive that feedback and respond to it and be able to find a way to provide that for our educators. And that will also help our implementation.
And you're both addressing some concerns that I'm seeing are coming in from our audience. The first being thinking about, again, what we do to support the teachers that are trying to really go through this and are having some issues, and all of this constant handholding and checking back and providing the refreshers keeps that in the forefront of their mind that we were serious when we invested in you to have this professional learning. Then there's a question regarding, oh, well, what about those people that say it's just the pendulum swing? We're on this bandwagon right now for science of reading. In a couple of years, it's going to go away. But you all are keeping it in the forefront. You're continuing to devote services and time to support this investment in your educators that really puts it in the forefront of all of these conversations so that it doesn't get hidden behind, oh, well, we finished our, you know, letters implementation, or we finished going through science of reading content instruction. We're done with that. No, you're never finished with that. You're constantly thinking about that work and how it's going to impact the decision. So I'm looking at the chat and people are making some very copious notes from what you all are saying. Is it possible, I'm putting you on the spot, okay, is it possible that you all are able to quantify the numbers of teachers that have experienced this science of reading professional learning in your state thus far? Do y'all by chance know the number of the impact? Because people are in the chat putting in some numbers of what they're doing and where they are. And we thank you for sharing those details. But do you want to, either one of you, share, if you could, and quantify, how many teachers have you all currently impacted with the science of reading movement so far in Columbus City and also in Kentucky?
So I'm looking at my phone, like, okay, is someone going to text me the exact number? But until I get the exact number,
that's fine.
I can tell you, as I have team members out there watching. So thank you guys. I believe as of our last check, we have around 1700 educators in our letters platform, and that is in our K-5 platform. So our approach was K-5 teachers. And then we also have, around 500, I believe, pre-K educators that are doing the early childhood letters. And in addition to that, we have around 250 administrators. That's inclusive of our principals, our assistant principals, and our principal supervisors, who are all going through the training at the same time.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
And Cassandra, I'll just add, in Kentucky, between the first and second cohorts, we have a little over 4,000 educators. And I'm going to group everyone together because we have some administrators who are taking the teacher course. We have some coaches that are taking the admin course. And so it's not completely divided by role. But we're very thankful for, again, their willingness to give of their time for such extensive, important learning. And we are hoping to have a significant number of participants in our third cohort that will start in the fall.
I'm loving that. And you all are sharing, again, these nuggets of what has worked well where you are. We've got people, as you know, in the audience that are sitting in a similar position, or that are here to learn more about science of reading and to figure out what was the magic that you all made happen for this widespread level of implementation there in where you all serve. So let's go in further about professional development, right? And how we're making this work and how it's been impactful where you are. And so think about coming from the lens of the district leaders, okay? So do you think the district leaders themselves should be trained? Because yesterday we had administrators from the school level, and many of them, before they became an administrator, were able to share with us that they had had a chance to experience science of reading content. But now think about people that sit where you sit and their access to this science of reading content. Do you think they should be trained in that content and therefore continue to serve as advocates as we try to move and accelerate literacy? And then also, you know, do you think there should be some type of requirement for specific kinds of literacy professional development for people that sit where you are, for a bit of a handholding for this team, this hierarchy that's supporting everything that happens below you? Both of you had talked about a top-down approach at some point in your commentary, but let's talk about the professional development for the people that sit in those higher seats, that upper echelon, to make them more accountable for what's happening for the schools and teachers that they serve. Do they need this themselves? So Nikki, you want to start us off, and then we'll follow it with Ebony, and we'll let Carrie wrap that up.
Sure, happy to do that. And in Kentucky, we would say yes, we definitely encourage district leaders to participate, especially in the letters for administrator course specifically. So we feel that that course addresses ways to promote, scale, and sustain across their systems. And so if they have that particular learning, then it will only better serve them in supporting building administrators and teachers who are going through that learning as well. And, you know, in Kentucky, we've established a sort of letters for administrators support group of sorts, and they meet as a community of practice to really process session content. We have supports to address the problems that they are encountering together. And this is led by our Division of Early Literacy team. And I'm just so thankful for their investment in both district leaders and building administrators as a part of their ongoing supports as they complete letters. But they also have conducted site visits. So there are several districts who were ahead of the game, frankly, on much of the science of reading work across our state. And so we've been able to use that community of practice to allow district leaders and building administrators to take a look into systems that are ahead of the game. And that has really been a game changer. And I'm so thankful for the Kentucky districts who have opened their doors to others to allow them to see and experience not only the teacher moves, but the engagement and student learning that's happening across the Commonwealth in this space.
That is so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Ebony?
I would echo what Mickey said. Our district leaders, especially our principals, also participated in letters for administrators. We started a little bit before the Letters for Administrator course was developed. So we also participated in a letters overview for administrators. I think that was the precursor to Letters for Administrators. And especially with that, our district leaders, so our principal supervisors, people at the central office, we all took that course. So we had an understanding of what our educators were going to go through. I think it's essential. I think it is a critical part of any kind of ecosystem that you're trying to build for you to have that foundational understanding of what is the learning. You know, you need to be able to speak the same language in order to effectively advocate for what it is that you need. And I believe engaging in that professional learning allows you to do that. Along with that, our principals also participate in letters with their staff. So they're getting the high level overview. So like she said, in the letters for admin, they're getting the systems talk. They're getting to talk with other principals and collaborate and think about, you know, how are they building that ecosystem within their building? But then they're also engaging and learning with their own teachers to get the in-depth knowledge as well. In addition, as a building leader, I think sometimes and a lot of our places of work probably have this. You have internal local experts, right? So I came into this position being a building administrator. And as an elementary building administrator, you have to become, you know, a knower of a lot of things. So literacy was not my expertise. But when I came in the role, I depended on the people who it was their expertise. So I would encourage district people to find those. I have to give a shout out to my team, especially Amber, who really helped me to learn in this role, like what I was looking for and what were those essential key components, because they had done the in-depth research. They knew all about the science of reading before I took my first course. And so learning alongside with them and finding those local experts within your district and bringing them to the table, having them on the team as well, the practitioners, the coaches, your teacher leaders, I think is essential in being able to advocate and to know what your responsibility in creating that ecosystem is.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, and Carrie, as you know, with letters, there's letters for early childhood, letters third edition for education for elementary teachers, there's letters for administrators. So what's your take also on that higher tier, that upper echelon of support in our districts and states, having that access to that professional learning through science of reading?
Sure. Well, I think Mickey and Ebony made such a strong case for why our administrators need to be grounded in the what of the science of reading, as well as why science of reading. I would like to return back to something you were saying earlier, Cassandra, that is, our district administrators are leading a significant paradigm shift, and it is away from this pendulum. The science of reading is not on a pendulum. The science of reading is evidence across decades, across disciplines, across languages, about how our brain learns to read, why some of us struggle with reading, and then most importantly, what instruction will mitigate that struggle. And then paradoxically, it is not a pendulum. I so empathize with the teachers and leaders who roll their eyes and say, yeah, I'll ride this one out because things just come and go. The science of reading has been with us for decades. We can rely on this. And because we follow the science, because we are always studying, because we are always holding ourselves to the highest possible standard of scientific research, what we know and learn evolves over time. So it is a continuum. There's a continuum of implementation science and where we are in our districts. What we know today is the best of what we know today. It's not going to be the best of what we know in a decade. But the more and more people we have doing that really high level of research, the better and better we will be in our practice. And that's part of what we need our district administrators to communicate across multiple stakeholder groups.
And it does matter. It is the focus. Mm-hmm. And so we all have to kind of wrap our arms and our brains around that. And if you're fortunate enough to sit in a seat high enough that helps make those decisions, if you are the stakeholder of what happens in that state or in that district, it would behoove you to be up to par and up to speed on these relevant topics regarding science of reading. So speaking of that in a way, and thinking about, you know, coming out of our COVID pandemic and all of the districts that had access to some COVID relief funds that at that point allowed them to address literacy issues that were in place before COVID. Don't think COVID created all this stuff, right? COVID might have exacerbated the issues they were already having. So here they have these COVID relief funds to help address their literacy issues. I mean, everything from training teachers and interventionists to buying curricular tools to help support their students and teachers' instruction. So now we think about unfinished learning, right? Mm-hmm. We continue to see poor performance in some state assessments, and further still trying to think about what do we do to help upper elementary who missed those critical decoding skills of early childhood that were, again, might've been impacted by the 2 or 3 years that we had dealing with the pandemic. And now they find themselves in classrooms that don't have much support, that don't have the tools that they need. And of course, the data is showing us as an example that some kids are not able to reach that threshold of what they need to achieve for those decoding skills, for those early skills. And so now they're in middle and high school. And no matter what we're trying to put in front of them, they are already so far behind that the opportunity to catch them up is very daunting. So what do we do? How can we address this for our third to fifth grade students that have slipped through the cracks? What do we do to support those upper elementary into middle school, high school students that did not have an opportunity to have the benefit of these funding opportunities that were given at this point past the pandemic that supported elementary grades? And now we're literacy post pandemic, right? What do we do to support this effort going forward for those that were beyond that point of need coming out of the pandemic? So Ebony, we'll start with you, and then we'll jump to Carrie and Mickey to weigh in.
I will say, I know one of the things that we did think about initially, while we still did have the funding, is the upper elementary grades. And so I think I mentioned before, we did train in our training our K-5 educators, because we do know the importance of, yes, in fourth and fifth grade, we still have students who are struggling with learning how to read, with reading, with decoding. And so we wanted our fourth and fifth grade educators to have the same foundational skills. So we felt good about that. Now, 6 through 12, we understand we are still working on that. They have engaged in some science of reading work. They focus a lot on disciplinary literacy, and through that work in their professional learning, they have been exposed. And as we continue to work on our plans moving forward, we're going to prioritize how we work and the resources that we provide for those teachers. So we feel like we were able to spend the initial dollars building that foundational set for our elementary grades, and now we can begin using other additional funding sources for our secondary. I will say we also built into our plan the training of local facilitators, so that we have people, we have over 30 trained local facilitators within our district who are able to help us with providing training for new teachers and those teachers who initially did not go through science of reading training, so that we can address them through the use of our local people in case we don't have the funding to use Lexia for all of our training anymore. But that was a critical plan and thinking of sustainability. With having so many schools in our district, we're bound to have new teachers, we're bound to have transition. So it was important for us to think about that. But as we look at our students in grades 4 and above, I think just knowing that we're able to strengthen the core for those as they're coming up, it's going to help lessen, hopefully, the students that we'll have to address further on. But we're in the process of looking at those additional intervention and resources for secondary.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is such a complex question, Cassandra, and one that comes up all over the country when we're meeting with district leaders. What about our secondary struggling readers? Because to your point, this struggling secondary readers is not a new phenomenon, but the inequities have been laid bare and we are still here addressing them. the word that leapt to mind, especially when we talked about funding, was curating. Very carefully curating your library of resources in your district to see what is truly yielding student level outcomes so that you can be very careful with those remaining dollars, because we're no longer in that sort of COVID windfall of funding. So really carefully curating those resources that are aligned to the science and yielding the outcomes. And then when I think about our secondary struggling readers, and I'm smiling because I taught ninth grade, and it's, you know, the challenge is, of course, we have some students whose skill level does not match their chronological age. And the most challenging thing, and probably the most important thing, is to empower and provide agency to those children to engage in instructional materials that align to their chronological age and interest while addressing those needs that are really well below that chronological age. We certainly have that ability with Power Up at Lexia. There are lots of ways that classroom teachers can bridge that gap through the science. The science looks a little different for secondary learners because their brains have changed and they're a little bit different, but it's doable. And like I was talking about that constant learning, we're really learning more and more about the adolescent brain, the science of reading, and how we empower secondary teachers, in our case through Aspire Professional Learning, to really reach those adolescent learners.
Thank you for that, Carrie. Mickey, adolescent learners. What you doing?
Yes, thank you. So just to add on to what Carrie had shared, I think in the Kentucky story, aligned resources are absolutely key. You know, we hear a lot of dissonance from teachers who have gone through a science of reading professional learning, and they're being asked to teach with a resource that is misaligned and is not current in terms of its evidence basis. And so I neglected to share earlier, but I really think it also is at the benefit of district leaders who in Kentucky have the decision-making authority on the aligned instructional resources. That's just further reason for them to understand the research and to understand the why and the what behind their selected resource. And we also are looking in Kentucky for ways to allow for secondary educators, so teachers of grade 6 through 12, to have some additional professional learning around the science of reading. And so we're looking to make an investment in those folks as well, in addition to our K through 5 educators. And that will be woven into the Kentucky Reading Academies and will be at no cost again to those secondary educators. And so we're very excited about the possibility there. But in terms of true teaching and learning, I believe to my bones that there is power and there is equity for both teacher and student experience in a high quality instructional resource. And so that the more training and support that everyone across the full system can have in association with those selected resources, the better it will be for teachers, the better it will be for students. And funding is always going to be an issue, especially in Kentucky, where we have not had funding for instructional resources in over a decade. There's been no professional learning funding statewide. And so superintendents, district leaders have to be very innovative and creative in the way that they're utilizing their funds. And so there are, of course, title funds that are available, ESS for some students if they're getting vacation academy support or high intensity tutoring in certain areas. But there is power, I think, in that investment of a resource and an aligned resource that is connected to the science of reading.
Thank you all so much for your insights on this. And again, I'm watching the chat and everyone's just so curious about everything that they came to this webinar to try to retain and achieve, to take back to wherever they are, to make sure that the science of reading conversation continues in a way that they can make some really impactful change there for wherever they're serving. And so we've kind of answered this a little bit as we've been going along, just in some of the details and nuggets that you all have been sharing. And as we think about what we're doing to support our actual teachers and how best to make sure that they are getting the access to the science of reading instruction that's going to basically impact what they implement and how they implement this with their students. So any other tidbits on thinking about making sure that decisions that they're making with regard to what they're selecting for use for curriculum materials, intervention materials, keeping that in the forefront. Any conversations for our teachers as they are making decisions, thinking about how best to implement science of reading for whatever solutions they currently have. And as a district or state leader, what can be done to support those teachers in making sure that they're making decisions for their instruction that truly are grounded in science of reading, evidence-based solutions and instructional practices. So let's see, let's start that off with you, Carrie, and then we'll go to Ebony.
Sure. I think it's, and we talked about a little bit, this idea of calling in all of our teachers. We want them to believe in this. And what we see and hear all over the country is that teachers who begin the science of reading transformation are the biggest champions of the transformation. Mm-hmm. I think most of us agree when our hard work yields the outcomes we're looking for, which is student achievement, student engagement, student joy, student confidence, because they're, you know, either they're learning what they need or their needs are being addressed. Our teachers are our biggest champions of this transformation, and we need to make it as simple for teachers as possible to understand each and every child, what is their strength, what is their need, and then most importantly, what instruction will address that need? Have we accurately diagnosed the need? And what instruction will mitigate that need? And we do that with really good actionable data that's tied to instruction. So the more administrators can invest in tools and opportunities and ongoing technology and getting that really rich actionable data to teachers and tying that data to SOR-based instruction, that's what teachers really need from us. And that reinvigorates joy, that reinvigorates that sense of purpose, because our teachers who are here, who are tough, they are tough. They've been with us a long time. They're showing up to do right. So let's make it as easy as possible for them to do the very hard work of teaching reading. And I know that my colleagues on the panel have great ideas for how to engage and sustain our teachers.
Thank you, Carrie. Ebony? Mm-hmm.
Oh, so let's see, where to begin? I would say the one thing that helps, especially for us, I've mentioned before, we have a very supportive superintendent, and she is known to say the magic happens in the classroom. And so she prioritizes for us as district leaders, just what Carrie said, like, how do we make it easy for our teachers to be able to do their job? And so that becomes the role and responsibility for my team and our level. We look at, okay, this is what they're learning, and these are the resources that we have. And as Mickey mentioned, are they aligned? And if they're not aligned, what do we need to do? What adjustments need to be made? If we have noticed or identified a gap, then what do we need to do to support them? So one of the things, for example, that we identified early on is that our current instructional resource was lacking in phonemic awareness. We're like, okay, this is crucial. What we have is not addressing it. So what do we need to do? So we went out and did some research, and we added an additional resource. We wanted to make it easy for our teachers. We didn't want them to have to say, okay, you need to instruct in phonemic awareness, but you have no support or no resource or anything. So again, as a district leader, I think our role is in helping to identify those gaps and then finding solutions that we feel that can address those gaps. And so that's what we do. And then what we also have done as part of our professional learning is we have tried to make direct connections for our teachers within their modules. So as they're learning, we have an in-school person that we call our course managers, who have been phenomenal in assisting us. And their role is to make the connections between what the teachers are learning in their letters units and what resources that we provide, where those align and how that alignment works. And we have seen a great response from our teachers in understanding, why do we have these two resources? Oh, this is why the district made that choice. Or, oh, this is where we're getting this component at while we're teaching. And I think that additional connection and making it specific to our district while they're learning has been instrumental in helping provide that additional support to teachers.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for that. Mickey, how's it working for you? What are your thoughts?
So I just want to celebrate all the things that have already been mentioned, but I would also challenge district leaders and if you're here as a district leader, it may seem very easy for me to say this, but I would ask you to consider available incentives for the participants in all of this. You know, would you be able to offer flexible professional learning hours, or is there any funding available for stipends or for release time, even for teachers to be able to have a day each quarter, potentially to collaborate with other teachers who are participating in the learning? Can you provide access again to those high quality resources and ongoing supports for teachers? Can you identify teacher leaders or master teachers who, you know, would open up their doors to other teachers within the building for observation and for support across the learning? And then, you know, is there dedicated time, whether that's a grade level team or a PLC, for intellectual prep, for unit internalization, lesson internalization, or even rehearsal around some of the most challenging lessons that teachers may face with a new resource? And then lastly, can you find ways to encourage just a student first mindset and work to create a climate where it's not so much competition? So my students versus your students, or our school versus the other school across town, but really a spirit of collaboration in which we're seeing all of our students as ours, and that they all have value, and that they all have very diverse needs that deserve to be met by high quality instruction.
Absolutely. You guys, I'm watching this clock and I'm just like, man, we are down to the wire. But I cannot let this audience leave without getting one last nugget from you guys. So, I mean, it would be nice if I could give each of y'all a minute. We don't really have a minute. So what I'm going to ask you to do is formulate a statement, right? A nugget based on your best piece of advice for all of these district leaders that are joining us today that have a desire to either improve upon or begin to implement literacy changes in their building, in their classrooms, for wherever they serve. How do they keep the momentum? How do they support teachers? How do they retain teachers? How do they continue so that this is not a pendulum shift where they are, and that they can focus their resources, time, and energy devoted to science of reading based on the position that they are very fortunate to hold in their state or district? I need you to give me a statement, all right? One final nugget for this audience. We cannot leave them without hearing from you all one last time. So let's go with Mickey first, then Ebony, and then Carrie's going to wrap us up.
Very challenging, but I would just say that the work matters, and everything that you're doing to invest in your teachers and in your students in literacy is truly not only an academic change, but a life change, and they deserve it. And it is a matter of equity. And so kudos to you and the work that you're doing wherever you are. And we're constantly pressing forward.
Ebony.
I would say build a great team who can focus on this work. It is challenging. It is time consuming, but like Mickey said, it is rewarding. And I think it is helpful when you have a team of individuals who can focus on it and who can keep it the priority. And those people would be able to help you champion and motivate your teachers and staff.
Excellent. Thank you. Gary.
As our district leaders lead by example, I would say, please learn by example. Learn out loud. Learn the science. Shout from the rooftops what you are learning and how it is improving the student experience in the classroom, and show us the way.
As they say, chef's kiss, right? Thank you so much. As you see, there is already love coming across this screen for everyone. Thanking you guys for being here today. Mickey, I have said this to you before, I'm going to say it again, and also for Ebony's presence as well. You all are creating legacies there where you are in Kentucky and in Columbus City in Ohio. You all are creating legacies. For our audience that's joining us today, we thank you so much. And dare I say, you all are also creating legacies where you are as well. Make them impactful for the teachers that you support and the students that you serve. Carrie, thank you. Lexia is just beaming because you represent us and you do it so well. And we just thank all of you for your time today. So as we wrap up, we are Thank you for everyone that attended live today. If you're watching this recording, thank you for your time to sit down and spend this time with us. I know you all are feeling as inspired as I am right now. Certainly, you're going to join us tomorrow. Tomorrow is our final day. We have 4 days this year for our Science of Reading Week, and you are not going to want to miss as we continue with these illuminating conversations. To all the teachers out there, heads up. Tomorrow at noon Eastern, it's all about you. We're going to cap off our Science of Reading Week programming with a phenomenal conversation geared specifically toward teachers that digs into the science of reading in action. You don't want to miss it. Again, I thank you so much. I am Cassandra Wheeler. I serve as the Director of Letter State Success with Lexia. It is my honor to be with you guys every single day for our Science of Reading Week as your host and moderator. And cousin Cassandra, I love it. Thank you all so much. Join us tomorrow. You don't want to miss it. It's our grand finale. And with that, we say thank you and goodbye, everyone. They're continuing to send love. They hate to leave every day. The screen is still flying with hearts and hand claps and horns of blazing emojis. Thank you all so much for your time today. We appreciate your being here. Nikki, Ebony, Carrie, this was just amazing. The nuggets that you all shared will be so impactful to these upper echelon state and district leaders across the nation. And I know they are so grateful for your expertise, time, and skill today, as I am. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.